There are some things that just go together. Barbecue and March Madness, hot coffee and a kitchen table, and, of course, jazz and hip-hop. Like, take Miles Davis's classic, So What? Run it through the hip-hopifier. And you get Freestyle Fellowship's Convolution.
A-C-G-G-G, a-cha-cha-cha, ooh, you got another way to get your work, gotcha. Ooh, me, my, wow, you got another way to get your work, gotcha. Please grab the 40 and 4 on a high contour, and do it for more on the shore, in beds for reds and nets, and let's get some of this, synopsis.
Today, performance poet Glenn North, local MC Reach, and jazz trumpeter Herman Mahari join us for today's Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Whether it's jazz we've got or we got the jazz, Kansas City's current music scene has a symbiotic relationship with the hip-hop group Tribe Called Quest, the artist behind that 1991 underground smash of a song. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. So, what's KC Jazz have to do with a hip-hop group from Queens, New York? Well, the last two themes of the American Jazz Museum's Bebop to Hip-Hop's event series have been dubbed, respectively, A Vibe Called Fresh and A Vibe Called Death. This year, sticking to that formula, on March 14th, our guests will take part in A Vibe Called Mesh. So joining us live are Glenn North, a spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, local trumpet sensation Herman Mahari, and hip-hop artist Reach. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Glenn, tell us about why A Tribe Called Quest has such a lasting influence on the local jazz and hip-hop fusion scene.
Well, I think that they were one of the first groups to really demonstrate in mainstream culture, the connection between jazz and hip hop. And so as we were moving towards the 20th anniversary of The Low End Theory, you know, one of their best selling albums, at the museum, we were having the discussion of how do we generate a new audience? How do we help this, you know, particular hip hop generation understand the significance of jazz and its influence on hip hop? And so, I had seen Reach and Herman Mahari and Diverse and Les doing a tribute to Common about a year prior, and thought that that would be a great vehicle to bring a new audience to the museum and to help our older constituency understand that hip hop does connect with the jazz that they grew up listening to, and to help the younger generation understand that a lot of these artists are standing on the shoulders of some of the greats that came before them.
So what's going to make A Vibe Called Mesh, which is this year's event, different from A Vibe Called Death and A Vibe Called Fresh, which is the two previous events? Reach?
The two previous events were emphasis on hip-hop, where jazz was kind of fit into the hip-hop aesthetic. And this one will be different in that the emphasis will be on jazz. So we'll be fitting hip-hop into a jazz understanding.
Herman, what do hip-hop and jazz have in common?
I think they have a lot in common. Insofar as, you know, one of the first things people like to point out is just the idea of improvisation, which to me is pretty obvious. You know, there's the idea of freestyling within hip-hop. And the MCs will be doing that. And then in jazz, there's improvisation is central to the music. But also central to the music to me is just the groove. I think there's a lot of similarities in the groove that sometimes people fail to see. But it's just as important in both musics.
There's also a one-upmanship vibe, a showmanship vibe, and a battling vibe in jazz as well that people don't know about as far as the jam sessions. Right, Rick?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's a very storied history of jazz musicians who've try to one-up one another on the stage. That spirit of competition exists in both genres.
Mm-hmm. Herman, to you, what the other guests can feel free to expound, by the way, what is one record you could say brings these two genres together perfectly, jazz and hip-hop? Just
perfectly.
Off at the top of your head. We do that. We're freestyling. We're improvising.
We're freestyling. So. Everyone freestyles every day. It's true.
Right.
We're doing that now. That's a good question. Perfect. Wow. See, that's an interesting question to me because, and I'm not trying to avoid the question, but I've been not trying to not see the differences between the musics recently. So, like, to me, although we are talking about this event that's bringing them together, you know, I'm not specifically necessarily seeing them as two separate entities. I'm trying to see them as one thing. But in, to answer your question, I would probably say the one we were talking about, Low End Theory, or Tribe Called Quest. Low End Theory is one that really
Throw it back to Reach in that same vein and redirect, if you will. What song can you think of that makes the relationship seamless? Not necessarily a perfect combination, but makes it look like the two just kind of meld into each other, hip-hop and jazz.
I would say A Tribe Called Quest, Electric Relaxation. I think that's a great example of kind of trying to understand where jazz ends and where the hip-hop begins in that particular conversation. I think that's a good
one. I think that scat, or just about anything off the Roots, Do You Want More album. I think that, you know, with Questlove, who was a trained jazz percussionist and drummer, that's really how I became introduced to traditional jazz, was that album was so, and those were original compositions, right? But they were really like informed by the jazz aesthetic. And then you got, you know, Black Thought rhyming over these, you know, obviously, you know, it wasn't like a sample, like they were playing jazz music on that album. And so then that made me really interested in learning more about jazz music. And you know, that was like 94, but that was when I really started to think about jazz specifically and started seeking it out.
Now, you said the word proceed, which mm-hmm. is a reference to the I Shall Proceed
and continue to rock
the mic.
Yeah.
How does that original jazz composition paired with hip-hop inform the melding process of the two genres in that particular instance?
Well, I think that, you know, you've got the MC who is really using his voice as an instrument in that particular song. And you've got, you know, the influence, as I said, of Questlove, who's a classically trained jazz drummer. You know, it's not so much him rhyming over like a scratched record or whatever. It's him like really listening to the music and using that music to kind of guide how he flows. And it is just a really interesting kind of, I think it took hip hop in a different direction when the Roots emerged on the scene.
Now, Reach, you're taking a different approach this year with this year's event in that it's sort of almost more like a lecture format a little bit, where in the past you did some covers and you did songs that everybody recognized and that they liked, but now you're breaking down the specifics and nuances of what makes jazz and hip hop go well together.
Absolutely. I think what we're trying to do here is just continue that conversation about the linkage between the two genres and how they inform one another. And I think that's what we're trying to do with this show. We just wanted to keep things fresh and kind of flip it around. Since there are two genres here at the table, we just kind of wanted to flip the hierarchy, I guess, so to speak, and fit hip hop into the jazz understanding so that we can, to our people that will be at the show, get a real understanding of how these two things are blended together and where we're actually taking an original source material or an original sample and pushing it forward to the actual records that appropriated them later.
Herman, have you ever played trumpet over a hip-hop instrumental, just played a hip-hop instrumental and played with the trumpet and see how it mixed together? And what was that like?
Not necessarily in a for a performance purpose, but, you know.
Yeah, but just playing around.
On my own, yeah.
Just playing around.
Definitely, yeah.
How did it feel? What was it like?
It's honestly, like I said, I'm trying to break down these barriers, and it I'm trying to make it feel the same in a sense as playing over a jazz song. And it almost is.
Is there a different approach, though, slightly?
I think so. You know, harmonically, you know, I'm not going to be playing a lot of the jazz, a typical jazz standard harmony. Still trying to play, you know, melodically, I think, which is always, for me, a goal for me.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM on your dial. KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are the joint architects of an ongoing event showcasing the synergy of hip-hop and jazz called From Bebop to Hip-Hop at the American Jazz Museum. We have with us Glenn North, a spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, local trumpet sensation Herman Mahari, and hip-hop artist Reach. The first track we're going to get into, first track pairing, rather, is Miles Davis's So What and Freestyle Fellowship's Convolutions that we heard at the top of the hour. Now, what does Miles Davis's So What bring to a hip-hop sensibility, Reach?
I think that particular track and the way that it was used, I think it was basically driven by the bass and also the rhythm. Just the groove of the song is, in Freestyle Fellowships, it's sped up, but ultimately it has the same feel and the same mood to it.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Miles Davis's So What, and you can get a sense of how it was put through the hip-hopifier, so to speak, and turned into a hip-hop track. So let's check out Miles Davis's So What. Miles Davis's So What, a classic jazz track. Now we're going to see what Freestyle Fellowship, a group out of L.A. that grew up around my time when I was out there, let's see what they did with Miles Davis's So What in speeding it up and adding their own flavor to it.
A-C-G-G-G, a-cha-cha-cha, ooh, you got another one to get you where it got you. Ooh, me, a-ma-ma-ma, wow, you got another one to get you where it's gone. Please grab the 40 and 4 on a high contour, and do it for more on the shore, in bed for reds and nets, and let's get some of this synopsis. Next up is a bomb coming at ya. Compose the complex rhymes, another batch test. Start a rhyme, two clips straight from black lips. Those who in a bit get crushed like corn chips. Jazz, we bout the blues. Ask me about the rules and do's and don't snooze it up. Red eyes a cha-cha and an extra. Go wiggle up the necklace, tickle in the cycle of music. Music, know the convolutions of hip-hop and jazz.
Freestyle Fellowship's Convolutions, a sample of Miles Davis's So What. We're talking about the symbiotic relationship between jazz and hip-hop through the eyes of local Kansas City artists Glenn North, Herman Mahari, and Reach. So, Glenn, spoken word is sort of a dangling participle
right,
in the confluence of jazz and hip-hop. Tell us what element spoken word brings to that discussion. You hear this Freestyle Fellowship track, and it sounds a little bit more like he's riding the beat spoken word-wise with the jazz riff. So tell us what spoken word brings to the table.
Well, there are several things. Like, you know, really there was a jazz vocalist named John Hendricks who kind of did this vocalese kind of thing that I hear on Convolutions with the Freestyle Fellowship. And, you know, so lyrically, he was using the music to kind of drive, you know, what he was writing. So far as spoken word is concerned, there's been like a resurgence of popularity in spoken word in starting in the early 90s. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the popularity of hip hop. I think that lyrically, when somebody like Reach is performing, there's definitely this desire to be in the pocket so far as the beat is concerned. But there are also rhythms that drive spoken word and cadences that we look for and explore. And I think that there's a relationship between all three, you know, spoken word, hip hop, and jazz. Because Langston Hughes was the first poet in modern history to say, you know what, I'm going to use jazz to inform my poetry, and I'm going to start looking at poetry as a performative art. And he actually started performing with jazz musicians like Charles Mingus.
a few moments ago, you mentioned being in the pocket almost like a quarterback, being protected by an offensive line, looking over the line, trying to get the reads on the defense.
Yeah.
Is that sort of what emceeing is like, Reach?
Absolutely.
In a lot of cases?
Absolutely.
In what ways?
I think ultimately what I try to do as an MC is find a way to fit within a groove or to fit within a particular structure of a song. So I see myself when I perform with Diverse, I see myself as just another horn, and I try to fit myself into the mix.
So taking the football metaphor a little bit further, it's kind of fun to do.
Okay.
Is spoken word then kind of like scrambling?
Well, I don't know if it's like scrambling so much. I think that, with spoken word, there's really more of a thought about exploring topics. I think that kind of drives spoken word. There's definitely an element of social consciousness involved in spoken word, and an attempt to deal with issues that we all confront, whether it's race or class or, you know, gender. And we try to use spoken word as a vehicle to communicate these messages. And one thing I think is really interesting to talk about in terms of this relationship between jazz and hip hop is the cultural dynamics that produced the music. I mean, you know, jazz came out of a desire for, you know, some kind of expression of who we are in a time when who black people were wasn't valued. And it went on to become an international phenomenon. And I think the same was true of hip hop as it began in the 1970s with these young black people in the inner city, you know, who didn't have the money to afford going into discos and whatnot, started their own parties in the park and really, you know, created another international phenomenon. So it's a continuum, but it's still kind of born out of the same social conditions.
For some of our listeners who aren't familiar with hip hop, who aren't familiar with spoken word, can you define the nuances of spoken word and its relationship to rapping? Because one might hear Reach, for instance, do an acapella verse or an acapella rap without music.
Mm-hmm.
And it might sound like a spoken word piece, but it's not.
Right.
What's the difference?
A lot of older people have called me a rapper, and I'm like, no.
That
is
not
what
dude.
I do. You know, spoken word is really poetry.
Right.
You know what I mean? At its essence, it is poetry, but it's poetry written with the thought that this poem is going to actually be performed. And there are elements of musicality in it, but it's not driven by music. I think with an hip-hop artist or, you know, a rapper, there's a flow. You know, there's a cadence, there's a desire, as Reach said, to think about the music or the beat that I'm going to be rhyming over. Or even if they did it a cappella, there's still this real attention to how am I going to deliver this in a musical fashion. And that influences spoken word, but that doesn't drive it.
So you not only perform spoken word, but you also teach it. In teaching it, what do you say to students in making that distinction?
What I just said.
What you said.
But we oftentimes do listen to hip hop songs to look at how the lyricist is a poet, looking at wordplay, looking at, you know, a deft use of metaphor, incorporating some of those elements. But, you know, it's really, I think, more about how the actual piece is being performed. A spoken word poem will sound different when it's being performed than
Do you ever catch somebody and say, no, you're rapping now.
Yeah.
You're rapping.
Yeah.
Throw it down, bring it out.
Right. Exactly. Right. Like, and you can tell when a student has tried to convert a rap into a poem. There's something about the way that they deliver it that, to me, it's very evident. But although, as Herman said, there are really these very small differences and a lot that they have in common, I think that the main thing that distinguishes the two is the style of delivery.
Herman, when you're playing under a spoken word performance artist and when you're playing with a rapper, what are the differences?
Well, typically, I know with a rapper, or MC, I should say,
and we can break down the difference between that too when we go to Reach.
Yeah, we could.
There is. I know Reach thinks there is.
So does Les. So when I'm playing with an MC, especially if I'm if the horn is part of the beat, I'm playing a repetitive line, you know, something over and over, or I just play it on the chorus. But definitely with, you know, with spoken word, it's there's a vibe that needs to be set, You know, I don't have to play the same thing over and over again, but I have to fit the vibe that's going on and what the spoken word artist is doing. And that's how I approach it. So it's pretty open in that regard, but that's the difference to me.
And Reach, what's different about an MC versus a rapper? And then we'll get into what's different about performing with a live jazz band.
Ouch,
so you got a lot on your plate.
That's
right
a tough
now.
One. I'm going to go against the grain here. I've always personally felt like there really isn't a difference. I think there are certain people who have taken that conservative approach to hip hop and how they define the two. I've never really looked at it that way. I think ultimately the distinction I make is good MC, bad MC, or good rapper, bad rapper. But ultimately, I think I do the same thing as everybody else does. There's no difference in effect between what I do and what Soulja Boy does. Save for the artistic merit and the artistic value of it. But I try to stay away from those because I think that's a way to kind of divide up the culture. And I think that gets to be a very tricky conversation. As an example, as a quick example, there are artists who are afforded a certain degree of appreciation or value. Artists like Dilla. That are valued within a certain subculture within hip hop. And those same people vilify artists like Lil Wayne. But if you truly break down their material, it's not altogether different. There's some of the same themes. That's why I think it gets to be a slippery slope when you try to distinguish those two roles. To me, ultimately, they're all the same, but I've been, you know, the word MC's always followed me around, so I don't have any issue with it.
Well, given your definition, let's bring it back to jazz. What's different about rapping with a live jazz band versus laying verses over a jazz track as opposed to the standard percussion bass heavy rap tracks? What's the difference there?
I think the main difference is the fact that it's a live format versus pre-recorded music. And I think that always kind of opens me up as an artist and it just frees me to fit differently within the music. I always feel like there's more swing in the way that I deliver with a band as opposed to with a pre-recorded track. So I think that's the main difference between the two is it's a live format versus pre-recorded. But, it also there's a lot more oftentimes a lot more musicality in performing with a live band than there can be sometimes in the tracks that we use as backing vocals, as backing tracks.
Well, let's take this example further with Ahmad Jamal's Swahili Land and comparing and contrasting it to De La Soul's The Stakes Are High. What happens in Swahili Land?
Swahili Land's a really long track, and the part that's appropriated for the sample is actually very, very short comparatively. So you see Dilla bringing in drums that swing and that are really heavy in comparison to the original track, the original Ahmad Jamal track.
Well, let's hear Ahmad Jamal's Swahili Land, and listeners out there can see if they can pick up those subtle nuances of De La Soul's Stakes of High, which we'll be playing right after that. But right now, Swahili Land.
Thank you.
snippet from Ahmad Jamal's Swahili Land. Now, fellas, you can catch the loop. You guys are all musicians and spoken word artists and hip-hop fans. You can catch the loop. There's an underlying repetitive piano and bass line that's there. Let's see if we can catch it by listening to De La Soul's Stakes Is High.
The instamatic focal point bringing damage to your burrows. Meet some brothers from the east with a beat that be thorough. Got the solar gravitation, so I'm bound to pull it. I gets down like brothers are found, ducking from bullets. Gun control means using both hands in my land. Yeah. It's all about the cautious living. Migrating to a higher form of consequence. Compliments are struggling, that shouldn't be notable. Man, every word I say should be a hip hop quote.
Sick of shaking asses. Sick of talking about blood. Sick of Versace glasses. Sick of slang. Sick of half ass award shows. Sick of name brand clothes. Sick of R&B. No trap. Cocaine and crack, which brings sickness to black. Sick of swole head rappers with they sickening raps. Claps and gap, making a whole sick world collapse. The facts are getting sick and even sicker for half.
De La Soul's Stakes Is High, with a sample from Ahmad Jamal's Swahili Land, which we played right before that. Tell us about that reach as an example of hip-hop's fusion with jazz.
So there again, I think we see the underlying loop that Dilla's added the heavier drums to. And the interesting part about how he used that was on the verses, he actually muted the high parts of, he filtered. So you're basically hearing mostly the bass line with the drums. And then when the chorus is in, and during certain parts of the verse, but on the choruses, you actually hear the horn stabs come in as well. So it's almost as though the jazzier parts of it are heard on the chorus. And he makes that contrast between the two during the verses.
And Herman Mahari, as a jazz artist, mm-hmm. you see that a lot of the top heavy melodies and inflections and improvisations are taken off the top of that.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much what you're hearing?
Certainly. Yeah.
We've been discussing the music and culture that serves as a basis for an ongoing event melding hip-hop and jazz called From Bebop to Hip-Hop at the American Jazz Museum on Wednesday, March 14th at 7 p.m. The event is called A Vibe Called Mesh. Glenn North, spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, local trumpet sensation Herman Mahari, and hip-hop artist Reach are our guests. We're going to pause for a quick break. When we return, we'll sample the art of sampling, snippets of the past, symbols of the present, preludes to the future. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Javelani LaFall. There are some things that just make a perfect pair. As I mentioned, barbecue and sports, coffee and your favorite NPR station, and of course, jazz and hip-hop. Throw in a dash of spoken word, and it hits the spot. We now continue our discussion about the music and culture that is a springboard for an ongoing event melding hip-hop and jazz called Bebop to Hip-Hop at the American Jazz Museum on Wednesday, March 14th at 7 p.m. The event is called A Vibe Called Mesh. And with us, live in the studio, is Glenn North, spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, a local trumpet sensation Herman Mahari, soft-spoken young man, and hip-hop artist Reach. Now, Reach, sampling has been going on for a long time as a staple of hip-hop production. Tell us about the role of sampling in hip-hop and sampling in your music and why jazz is one of the top genres to, wait for it, reach from.
Wow. I think, you know, hip hop has always kind of relied upon the sample from the very beginning. And I think hip hop began to appropriate jazz in about its second generation. Somewhere along the late 80s, early 90s, hip hop began exploring its roots in jazz. So it's always been at a base level. It's always been a very integral part of how hip-hop is produced.
Sure, you had groups such as Diggable Planets, you had the Fugees, you had Freestyle Fellowship, as we heard, Gangstar, for instance, with using a lot of the jazz samples and loops. DJ Premier was very famous for that at the beginning of the 90s. Common,
absolutely.
When he first came out, when his name was Common Sense, used a lot of jazz. When you're digging through the crates, take us inside that process. When you're digging through the crates, what are you looking for specifically when you're looking through old jazz albums, looking for something to sample, put on the beat machine? What is it that you're looking for?
I think ultimately you're always looking for something that just moves you initially. Me being a fan of both genres, of both jazz and of both hip hop, when I'm looking for jazz records to sample, I'm always, as a big fan of the piano, I'm always looking for a loop, something that can easily be looped or something that can be broken apart and recreated melodically in a track.
What's that magical moment when it sticks out in a jazz track and makes you arrive at the choosing of a horn or snare to use or a piano riff to loop or a drum solo to siphon off? What is that magical moment like?
I think it's that moment where you hear something and you go back to hear it two or three times. You go back to play it again to arrive at that same feeling. And I think once you found that moment, you found that loop, whether it could be one or two bars. But once you find that part that you realize you can appropriate for something and make it special by giving it your own musical take, I think that's the moment.
We talked about a lot of these groups with a jazz influence, but probably the group with the most consistent and pervasive jazz influence over a longer stretch of time has been A Tribe Called Quest. Tell us about their influence on your music, and then we'll get into some specific tracks where we hear how they use jazz.
I think A Tribe Called Quest has always been one of my favorite groups, and I think when they started, they were one of the first groups to really explore that lineage between the two genres. And I think just the way that they've always produced their music, from the boom bap of the early part of their career to the stuff that was more melodic and bassline driven later in their career in partnering with Dilla and other artists of that ilk. That's always kind of been a formula for me and how I've wanted to recreate my music in the feel that I've always wanted to give my tracks.
Well, we have a perfect pairing here. Ronnie Foster's Mystic Brew with A Tribe Called Quest.
Classic.
Electric Relaxation, another equal classic. Tell us about how these two come together.
So on Mystic Brew, the Ronnie Foster track, it's essentially, again, here driven by the bass line. And then when it's appropriated by A Tribe Called Quest, it adds some livelier drums to it, but kind of maintains the same integrity of that particular loop that they used.
Well, let's hear Mystic Brew, the inspiration for Electric Relaxation, which we'll hear right after that. Mystic Brew, right now. Of Ronnie Foster's Mystic Brew, and you might recognize that melody, you might recognize that cadence from another classic that we're going to play right now by A Tribe Called Quest called Electric Relaxation. A little bit from Electric Relaxation by A Tribe Called Quest from Ronnie Foster's Mystic Brew. Glenn, that's almost an example where if it were written in words, it would almost be copied down word for word with a few new verbs and adverbs put in it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that fusion.
Well, I mean, I think that the way that Q-Tip and Fife rhyme over that, I mean, as we talked about earlier, is totally in the pocket. And on that particular sample, I think that they just really kind of it was kind of pure. I mean, I think that you could readily identify. Sometimes samples are kind of fuzzy, but that lick was just so great that they just kept it intact.
Now we're going to hear a sample from Reach called How to Fish. Tell us about the song How to Fish and what the process was in gathering a jazz inspiration.
So this is a song I wrote about my late grandfather as a memoriam and as a tribute to his life. This particular song appropriates Cedar Walton. Cedar Walton's Another Star, which is basically another take on a Stevie Wonder record. But for this particular song, I worked with a producer in France that utilized the sample for this piece.
So he found the sample and just sent you the track?
Right.
Did you do any further research on the song to find out who Cedar Walton was and sort of capture that vibe, or just out of curiosity?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's always a precursor to finding additional music. It's always a window into finding jazz or into finding, you know, whatever informs hip hop.
Well, let's hear Reach's How to Fish and Hip Hop and Jazz Fusion right now.
Yeah. A little different this time. Got my grandfather on my mind, you know. All right, yeah. I took a silent moment in remembrance of him, an angler of the soul, a true fisherman of men. I wrote a couple words and I'ma send them on the winds. I'm sure that you and God are talking, skim them when you can. I realize you're gone, but I know you left your recipe. We're living in your words and we're basking in your legacy. Rest in peace for now, we'll see you later on. If nothing else, we'll see you every time we play the song. I say to y'all, he caught us all like the con. Life was hard, but he got it right with God. And now we on the other side, see him in my mother's eyes. In a few, we'll be together again when the sun arrives. Yes, you passed, you went away, and that's too bad. How about you, what you taught? You're the dad I never had. Some of your words, honestly, I left them in the past. No, they didn't all stick, but surely the message has. My grandfather never bought a lot of gifts, but he handed me a rod and he taught me how to fish. My grandfather never bought a lot of gifts, but he handed me a rod and he taught me how to fish. My grandfather never bought a lot of gifts, but he handed me a rod and he taught me how to fish. My grandfather never bought a lot of gifts, but he handed me a rod and he taught me how to fish. I'm a fisherman now, you're living through your grandson. I ain't sitting around, cause that'll leave me hamstrung. It's like I got a son that I gotta raise. So I gotta grind, I ain't got it made. That means I gotta work, gotta keep a job in. Means I gotta grow, gotta leap the fog in. That means I gotta pray, find a piece of God in. Fishing with discipline, I gotta keep the rod, man.
A little excerpt of How to Fish by Reach. We're talking about the fusion between jazz and hip-hop and the inspiration of jazz in hip-hop tracks and vice versa. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are the joint architects of an ongoing event showcasing the synergy of hip-hop and jazz called From Bebop to Hip-Hop at the American Jazz Museum. The upcoming event, Wednesday, March 14th at 7 p.m., is called A Vibe Called Mesh. We have with us Glenn North, a spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum, local jazz trumpet sensation Herman Mahari, and hip-hop artist Reach, whose track you just heard. Kansas City, in what ways are hip-hop and jazz the perfect fit? Who are your favorite jazz-inspired hip-hop artists? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Lance writes us and says he's curious to see if you and your guests have heard of the latest offerings from Robert Glasper. His new album, Black Radio, is a perfect example of a project that combines jazz and hip hop. His experience Black Radio project is what Lance is referring to, mm-hmm. A jazz pianist using Erykah Badu and a lot of the other artists that were mentioned throughout this broadcast in collaboration. Herman, does that have a special place for you or give you special inspiration?
Yeah, it's funny. Just mentioned that album. It's kind of in the community, everyone's really talking about it right now. It's in, it made the Billboard Top 200, which I think, I don't know how often that happens for a jazz record, but it's pretty cool. And Robert Glasper has been doing this thing for a while, and he finally put it all together on an album. He's been collaborating with these hip-hop artists with the same idea, you know, with what's happening with his series at the Blue Room. And now he's kind of all put into one record. So it's really cool that it's coming together like that.
What makes something like that stick out, the Glasper Project? He's been doing it for a while. What makes a jazz and hip-hop collaboration break through the sort of inside baseball cult phenomenon that it can be with lovers of both of the genres? What makes it break into a Billboard chart? What gives it a wider mass appeal, reach?
I think ultimately it's that people have different listening habits than they used to have, say, 10, 15 years ago. Now, if you look at someone's iPod playlist, it'll have everything from Jay-Z to Radiohead to Robert Glasper. So I think now people having wider taste and exploring all of these various genres and their connections and the linkage between them, I think that is kind of driving this forward. And then you couple that with the shared appreciation for both genres and how they connect. Artists like, you know, Lupe, who's working with Glasper, and Glasper had a relationship with Dilla. So all of these things kind of combining, I think, make this is kind of the new wave in music now.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Let us know who some of your favorite hip-hop jazz-inspired artists are and what you like about a particular track or approach. Glenn, what makes the fusion of jazz and hip-hop in KC in particular unique?
Well, the thing is, Kansas City has this rich jazz tradition, and the museum is definitely wanting to honor that. You know, this is the community that produced Charlie Parker, which is arguably the greatest jazz musician who ever lived. Now you got young men like Herman, who's just doing amazing things with the verse and his skills as a trumpet player. And you got local hip hop artists like Reach and Les Ismore that are part of a continuation. And so we just want to be able to tell that story, and we want to be able to cross pollinate. I mean, we hope that 65-year-old jazz lovers will come to this show and discover, you know, hip hop in a new and refreshing way, and that young people will have an opportunity to see the relevance of jazz and want to learn more about it.
Herman, we just mentioned Robert Glasper. Do you personally see a growth of hip hop influenced jazz, as many musicians such as yourself from the hip hop generation who don't rap but love hip hop but play classical music or jazz come on the music scene? Do you see an influx of these type of hip-hop influenced artists who work in other genres?
I think so. I mean, a lot of it's just generational. The music, a lot of people are growing up with the music, so there's the influence is going to be there. I mean, I think that's how the fusion movement grew up in, you know, the 70s, because it was those people back then were listening to rock and all the music that was really popular at the time, and that's kind of the same idea of what's happening now, you know.
Reach, is there a signature Kansas City sound? You mentioned you and Les Ismore. Is there a signature Kansas City sound when it comes to jazz and hybrid hip hop?
I think there are certain artists that observe the conversation between those two genres, like myself, artists like Les Ismore, and there are other artists around town. But I think there is a subculture here in Kansas City of people who appreciate the fact that jazz is in our DNA, so to speak. So, you know, there's a certain level of pride that comes along with being able to reinterpret that in our music, being from Kansas City.
An interesting footnote, an artist that you may have heard of by the name of Miles Bonney, the first time I've ever seen someone play a horn over a breakbeat while DJing,
sure,
was Miles Bonney, and that was right here in Midtown Kansas City. I'm a great lover of jazz and a great lover of hip hop, and that's the first time I'd ever seen that done.
Absolutely, so, Miles is definitely right there in that subculture, in that group of artists like myself who share this appreciation for both, and not only share it but push that envelope further down the table.
And by the way, Miles Bonney does Central Standard's theme music, so that's a personal plug for him and for the show itself that we just thought we'd get in there. Glenn, why is it important for an institution like the American Jazz Museum to support this movement?
Well, I mean, we are a viable institution, and, you know, although we struggle like a lot of other nonprofits, you know, we have resources that we can use to create a platform for musicians like Herman and Reach. And, you know, as I talked about, I mean, when you look at history through the lens of jazz, I mean, there's a great story that we see in terms of, you know, American culture, race relations, and all of those things. And so we want to look at that whole story. And with us being an educational institution, it gives us an opportunity to support local musicians, but to also look at this valuable history and the history that's being created right now. So hopefully 20 years from now, somebody will be able to look at a videotape of Reach and Herman doing their thing and learn something from it in terms of what they're trying to do.
We've been asking listeners who their favorite hip-hop influenced jazz artists are and whatever offerings they'd like to add to the conversation. Jose writes he wanted to add someone such as Gil Scott-Heron to support this synergy of jazz, poetry, and hip-hop.
Yeah.
Also, he says, let's acknowledge Miles Davis's influence, whose album, the last album, was Doobop, which was posthumously released. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jose, for contributing to that in the conversation. Reach, if you could work with a jazz artist from any era, putting you in the hot seat right now, if you could work with a jazz artist from any era, who would it be?
Coltrane.
Why?
Coltrane's always been one of my favorites, and I think the language of his music and the overall tone of his music fits the mood and the tone of my music.
What is it about the pace, the cadence, the emotion, the cool? What is it?
All of the above.
Pretty much all of the above.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you look at tracks like Afro Blue or tracks like Naima. I've always enjoyed and appreciated hip-hop that was moody, so to speak. And I think his music always had a certain mood. It always put me in a certain mood. So he, but without question, would be the artist.
A certain cinematic feel.
Absolutely.
Herman, step up to the mic. Who would be your favorite hip-hop artist to collaborate with, play trumpet alongside, from any point in history?
Reach, man.
Reach. Sitting right next to him.
I'd probably say Jay-Z.
Why is that?
Because he's my favorite MC.
He's your favorite MC?
Yeah. I really... we talked about earlier in the show about how the MC is part of the track, is an instrument in the track, and I feel like Jay-Z really takes that to that level. His flow and his sound, his rhythm is every time perfect for every song that he does, and I love how he takes the time to put that much attention to detail.
What about Jay-Z's style meshes with your style as a trumpeter?
With my style?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's even such a directly musical thing. I think it's just, like I said, it was like his attention to detail to the music and his expectations for how the music should go. Because he's done a wide variety of things. And he has used horns in his music, you know, I for sure.
Glenn North.
Yes,
if
sir.
You were to make a spoken word album and spit your game over a jazz soloist or jazz band in the background, who would it be?
It would be, if we're talking historically, it would be Charlie Parker, because I think that Charlie Parker would push me to a place, you know, with his accomplishment of creating a whole new sound in jazz. I would love to be able to somehow push spoken word and push poetry forward and explore new things. If we're talking about locally, it would be with Gerald Dunn and the Jazz Disciples. I've done some work with them, and you know, him and Mike and Tyrone and Everett. When you were talking earlier about how do you play in terms of accompanying a poet, there's something that they do that's very lush, and it seems like it makes my poem sound even better, and I feel very safe with them.
So what can we expect, Glenn, to see at this event, A Vibe Called Mesh, on Wednesday night?
Well, it's falling under the umbrella of our education department. So at 7:00, we'll open up with a brief discussion, kind of continuing this conversation that we're having here, just talking about the relationship between the two. And I'll be looking at some lyrics of some of the songs that we've talked about and talking about them from a spoken word perspective. And then you will see, and I mean this with all sincerity, I've had the best time in the world watching these last two performances. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it was, these are shows that I would pay top dollar for. I mean, Herman, Les, Reach. I mean, it's like I love my job when I have an opportunity to put together a show like this. And you talk about people having a good time, man. Yeah, you want to be there.
Reach, is this a special experience performing these mashups or meshes or bringing genres together? Is it unique experience?
I think so. I think, you know, what we're trying to do is we're trying to further this legacy that Kansas City has. You know, we always talk about it in these older terms as though, you know, there's not a continuing history and there's not a continuing legacy of the music. And that, I think, is ultimately what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to keep that history rich and write our own addition to that history going forward.
How does KC's community support influence the music?
I think, you know, ultimately having the support of the community and having people who are interested in seeing us push that ball down the field, that further energizes us and gives us an opportunity to find new ways to reinterpret this history.
Herman, do these collaborations ever inspire any ideas on ways to build on this jazz and hip-hop tradition?
Certainly. And for me and us in Diverse, and well, the thing about what we've been doing is we've been collaborating with Les and Reach beyond just these shows as a result. And so we're working on creating music. We're recreating their music. We've even had a little bit of them over our music. So it's built this relationship. So I'm excited to see what music will come of it that's purely our own. And it will definitely be influenced by these genres.
Our guests are the joint architects of an ongoing event showcasing the synergy of hip-hop and jazz called From Bebop to Hip-Hop. It's going to be at the American Jazz Museum. The event is called A Vibe Called Mesh, Wednesday, March 14th at 7 p.m. Our guests are the three people involved in that event. Glenn North, a spoken word artist and poet in residence at the American Jazz Museum. A local trumpet sensation Herman Mahari and hip-hop artist Reach. Thank you all for coming on Central Standard today, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow when we look at a program from Cerner aimed at children's health. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Up to Date is next with the Techsperts. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.